everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about some dum-dums who fell in a hole. I'm joined, as always, by Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. Hey, gang, what's good?
Hello.
These fucking guys going down a hole so fast. Oh, my God. They're immediately... This clown's going down a pit. So this is going to be part 3 of this episode, I believe, because there was... so much early on, but this episode is titled Slash Dance for some reason, and last time our team has kind of broken up and started running off separately. Rita and Brooke ran off and got to the parking lot where we found out Rita's nasty now, and she's not actually Rita, she's
Donna?
Someone else. That sounds right. That sounds right. And she injected Brooke with the needle that makes your legs stop working. And the fellas somehow fell in a pit. And the cocaine Olympian got a shoulder impalement. And
I don't think he got injured. Yeah, I think he like somehow didn't hit any of the stick. That means it's a kind of dog shit punji pit if you can just like not hit the sticks. I think that means that you did bad. I think that means that it's a bad one.
Yeah. That or he just like dabbed on the right frame, just like got through.
He had iframes no as problems. He was falling. He had specifically iframes as he was falling. Man, that you'd think cocaine would give you iframes as you're falling, not being a little bitch.
Yeah, right.
That's crazy.
So we left off at coming back to the pit, where, oh man. Ray flashback sequence.
Are you ready?
Ray, for whatever reason, the show decided over the last like 20 minutes or so that Ray fucking sucks and we should hate him. So they had him do all this like survival of the fittest, I gotta go guys, see you later, even when it like did not behoove him and was not a good survival strategy. He was still just like, I'm out of here later, fellas. And again, like, cocaine Olympian. Like, what are you doing splitting up? What are you talking about? But it's time for us to get a little bit of Ray backstory, because Ray is kind of talking to himself and kind of trying to, like, I don't know, get some stuff off his chest, kind of half assuming Chet can, you know, hear him and that Chet is like fully passed out from the pain or whatever. And Ray decides to get off his chest what his big crime is that he's trying to get away from. And it's so stupid. It's so dumb. So flashback. Because this show cannot help itself, so we got to get a flashback in. Mm-hmm. Ray is back at a frat party, and it is Rush Week, which for those of you blissfully unaware of the like Greek school system at colleges, generally you essentially have a tryout period, and towards the end of it, there is usually a particularly brutal part of the tryout period where there are all sorts of different like mythical hazing rituals of different varieties. Like the one I always heard about was taking all of the pledges to one of the like smaller rooms in the building, bringing in an absolutely impossible amount of alcohol, placing it in the room, locking the doors and telling them they're not allowed to leave until they finish it. That's the one I always heard about. But they're going to bring out the ones that are, clearly have never happened and are not true.
I think my favorite one that I've ever heard of is called Chicken Cutlets, where apparently you get a bunch of them drunk and go on the beach and then make them strip down and like roll around in the sand. And oh. I don't know that that's true, but it's a good name, you know?
It's just like a powerful activity, just in general. That's just like a powerful activity to do. It's also like pretty close to just like what you do on the beach anyway, with like just slightly more clothing involved. So It's just, that one's like, I don't know, pretty harmless, I guess, compared to what they're about to insinuate that they do. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Like, there definitely have been historically, like, really, bad hazing rituals that have gotten people, like, seriously injured.
Oh, yeah.
The one they're about to describe, both what they are doing and then also the one that ends up being the bad thing that Rey is confessing about, isn't real. is like a myth, is a mythos. And I know because I had to Google it, and it was one of the most risky Googles I've ever done in my entire life.
It's cool because I had already heard about this, so I didn't need to Google it. I already was like, oh, that's, they're thinking that's real, that's stupid. So what it is Rey's at the frat party and they're making the pledges, get hammered, which, okay, that is accurate. Yeah, there's a good period of time in a frat where you were just drinking 24/7 more or less,
right?
Get naked. Yeah, they did that sometimes, but it was usually more just like send them out streaking, that kind of thing. And then grab each other's penises like human centipede and march in a circle. That part, they do not actually do that part.
They call it, okay, so upon Googling, I actually had to learn a lot about this. And by had to, I mean I was not going
about
to
the
rest.
Elephant walk?
Yeah, I was not going to rest well unless I knew. I mostly needed to know for my own peace of mind that American Horror Story was yet again wrong about something and not telling the truth that this is real, because I'm
many
like
such cases.
I would have heard about this if this was happening. Like, I, listen, I'm not like the most important person in the world, but I would have heard about this if this was happening, I think. So they
I would know if men were grabbing each other's penises and walking in a circle.
Yeah, I think someone
would
have told me.
With all due respect, I would know.
This would have come across my desk
at some point, professor.
I think. Yeah, I think you'll find my expertise in this matter. So it's called elephant walking, and it there is a real thing, a real college-like tradition called elephant walking that's specifically for Texas A&M, and it was made in like the 1920s, like forever ago.
Yes. And like all real college traditions, it is actually really boring and symbolic.
Yeah, and like literally all it is like after the Texas A&M lost a game, when they were walking out, when the people who were cheering for the team were walking out, they looked really sad, and someone like kind of in passing was like, oh, that looks like how elephants like walk, and it looks so sad. And so they started doing this thing every year for good luck, where they would all walk, like a bunch of people before the game would like make a conga line essentially, but only using one hand on the person in front of them's shoulder, and they would like do it like the symbolic walk before the game to like good luck tradition basically. There is a conversely kind of a, I would say, like urban legend, but it's one of those things where like it's the kind of thing that a fraternity would say another fraternity does as their hazing ritual.
Correct.
To kind of like take a little jab at them. Like it's supposed to be, it's not like a, ooh, did you hear so-and-so does this? It's a, oh yeah, we heard the boys at Alpha Beta Zeta, they do the elephant walk every year. And what that is,
the one I always heard was they took their pledges out into the middle of a nearby field and told them they had to like try to fuck a sheep or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing. Yeah.
Or there's like the gross cookie where y'all jerk off on a cookie and the last person to finish has to eat it.
Yeah, soggy biscuit
game. I've heard
that one.
See, like I said, I think this would have come across my desk if this was actually happening.
I feel like it's like one of them just kind of like, have you heard this other, there's other house does that for Russian? Do we want to do that? Is that fun? Is that a good idea? No,
yeah,
I know.
Like one guy's like, well, can we do that? You said these guys
that's
do it.
Disgusting,
can we do it?
Right? I mean, I don't know. Maybe, you know.
Which,
no, yeah, okay, all right. Yeah,
what's
kind
of like crazy is like the fictionalized version that, like I said, it's kind of like an urban legend that people use as like a dig at other fraternities is like, it's not just like holding the guy in behind you's dick. It's that you like walk in a straight line with your thumb up the guy in front of you's butt and then holding the guy behind you's dick, which I'm like, that sounds like a logistical nightmare. I have to be honest. Like American Horror Story just made it holding each other's dicks. The like real fake one seems like a logistical nightmare. Like I don't know if you've ever tried to organize like a game of D&D.
Thumb up the butt?
Like that, think that level of like difficulty. It's really quite, that's why I know it's not real, is because you can't organize that many like college age boys to have that
much
coordination.
Drunk. Yeah.
Like, you would need like a WoW raid group.
Yeah.
You'd need like a team.
That's not really like a hazing ritual thing. Also, like, I think some of the more like, I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember off the top of my head, but like some of the more like famous like bad things that have actually happened in real life usually are like because someone gets injured or the actual activity is inherently dangerous, which drinking a lot can be dangerous. That of course always has its own, like, it comes with its own set of dangers, but like outside of just like alcohol poisoning, it's usually like, oh yeah, we made someone like walk a tightrope while they were inebriated and then they like fell and broke their neck or something.
Or like we made them drink like an entire bottle of Everclear and they died because we're fucking stupid and we were drunk too or something. You know what I mean? Like it's usually like around a severe amount of alcohol poisoning or something.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Like, I mean, shit, while I was at Purdue, there was a reported case of, somebody had to get taken to the hospital to get their stomach pumped because they were like so beyond where they should have been. So like it happens. Alcohol will kill you. It's poison.
It's
poison. They don't get enough in you at once. It's poison.
They call it intoxication for nothing.
The other one that I think I remember seeing in the news a couple of times, because Texas universities for some reason are very bad about this, is more so like, oh yeah, the fraternity got in trouble and they had to stop doing their hazing ritual because it was just like relentless psychological warfare, or like bullying, to the degree of like people just could not psychologically handle it because it was like these people would terrorize you constantly for like all of rush week, and I mean like terrorize you, not just like, ooh, we run up and pants you, like genuinely make your life a living nightmare.
Some of these folks are folks who are, they consider themselves above other people because they come from money and they are not actually above other people, but they would love to try and act like it. And it's really dangerous when you give these people that kind of a position. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, like middle management. You find that a lot in middle management where people get a little taste of power and they immediately want to abuse it because they have no other control in their life. Yeah, that kind of a thing. Yeah. So that what they're doing, not real. I also like I had the thought as I was watching and I was doing all this research is I'm like, so they like obviously they have heard about like the fictionalized version and also the real version because they landed somewhere in the middle. Like the American Horror Story version's like somewhere in between the real thing and the fake imaginary thing. So it seems like I don't know if they Google because it was kind of hard for me to find this info. So I don't know what they like looked up because usually when they have some kind of reference to something, it's literally just the Wikipedia.
So yeah, for what it's worth, it's just something I had heard about. And for what it's worth, I also had never heard about the thumb up the butt part of it.
Nice.
So like, I'm willing to bet they just also heard about it passively through the grapevine in kind of a similar fashion that I did, where it's just like, oh yeah, I gotta march around holding the dick of the guy in front of you. And it's like, well, why?
Because it's an elephant walk, obviously. Because, like, I don't know. I didn't go to, like, on-campus college. I did online school. So, like, I didn't, like, see college life. So I have to imagine that a lot of the fraternity and sorority stuff is, like, kind of played off in real life. It's, like, you see it in movies, too. But, like, as, oh, we're making you do this because it proves you're down to hang or something like that. It's like almost like a gang initiation type deal where like we're making sure you're going to be cool, basically.
This is often why there is so much alcohol involved, because they want to make sure you can handle your alcohol, because in a lot of like college fraternity sorority settings, the question of can you hang is can you get 7 drinks deep and not lose your mind?
Yeah.
I think there's also kind of a level of like, I had to go through this, now you do too. It's my turn to be a bully or whatever, really. You know what I mean?
Paying it forward, but parentheses negative. Yeah. Speaking of not being able to hold your alcohol, that is what's happening in this flashback. There is one of the pledges. At this point, Ray is established to already have been in the fraternity. But there's another pledge named Chan, which kind of feels like a J.K. Rowling-ass name for the only Asian character in this flashback. And he's not holding his liquor very well. And Ray takes him aside and like a little closet, kind of. Like, they take him into the room where they're going to do the elephant walk, and Chan like almost passes out. So Ray takes him aside to like what looks like some kind of storage closet. And he's like, hey, man, you and me are the only minorities here, like literally the only minorities, which I don't know if we've ever said it in the podcast, but Ray is the only black character that was like part of the original group. So like, this is the only time they bring up like him being a minority in this specific flashback as a plot point, which is kind of weird. But he's like, you have to keep your shit together and like represent us well. So I'm going to give you a chance that the other guys don't have, where you can take like a little nap in this closet. And then you can like keep going. Like, I'm giving you like a little advantage, because I want to not be the only minority in this fraternity.
We have to jerk off the other Fletches a little more than other people, okay? Yeah.
We have to prove that we can hold the dicks of the guys in front of us. Sorry, going back to that, like, if that was something did every year, like, I'm built different. If like you walked me into a room, if I was a man and you walked me into a room and was like, ha ha, this is the like dehumanizing thing we're gonna make you do for your hazing ritual, I'd be like, okay, so this means you did it too, right? So you also jerked off a guy, so like you no longer have any authority over me. I'm not gonna be humiliated. I know you also had a thumb up your butt and jerked off a guy behind you, like everyone has to do it.
I have to jerk him off? I thought it was just I was hanging on to him. I thought it was a passive activity.
It is kind of passive.
You're telling me I got to march in a circle, go skiing with one hand, and plug a dam with the other? That's crazy.
That is
okay, first of all, I told you, logistical nightmare. It's a rubbing your stomach, patting your head type situation. Like if it's chewing gum walking upstairs. But also, just the motion of walking in a circle, carousel style, is gonna make you accidentally jerk off the guy behind you. Like, you can't not accidentally jerk off the guy behind you. Like, it's just gonna happen.
A little different. I would simply not accidentally jerk off the guy behind me.
Well, that sounds like you're gonna have to find an elephant walk to take part in to test this theory.
This is why you need to do it on the beach, because the natural terrain then causes that friction. In this paper, I will...
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. In this speech, I will.
Why are you leaving so quickly? All right. Well,
why did nobody come to my TED Talk? Anyway.
So Chan's being pulled aside because he's way too wasted. Was he pissing? Was this guy pissing? I feel like he was pissing.
I think he was like getting ready to throw up. His pants were around his ankles because he was going to need to, like, jerk off the guy behind him. Like, he was getting geared up to do the elephant walk.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I was like, usually I don't take my pants off to throw up. But
I mean, sometimes
that's
you
a skill gap on my part.
I have definitely had food poisoning bad enough that I was like, get all these clothes off me. If I have a single shred of clothing on me during this, I'm going to go crazy. So I get it.
But he goes to pull his pants back up and just like falls down the stairs in the worst way possible. And Ray like is so quick to just be like, oh, shit, guess he's dead. Like, doesn't think, oh, this guy who was so fucking wasted drunk maybe just got knocked out, right, by falling down the stairs or whatever. Because like, people fall down the stairs every day without dying, you know? Yeah, just check, man. Just check. So he doesn't check. He just assumes, oh, yeah, I guess Chan's dead.
Guess he's dead, yeah.
Well, oops. Well.
Yeah, I guess I'll handle this. So he takes Chan's, like, body and puts it in a car and takes it out. This is like a multi-hour operation. Like, there has to be a point where someone at the frat is like, hey, does anyone know where Ray went?
Like, and Chan? Didn't we have another pledge?
Yeah, and Chan? Yeah, hey, does anyone know where our, like, two minority are?
Listen, I'm not being weird about it, but it is the only two not white
really
guys.
It's going to look bad if we lose those two specifically. It's going to look really fucking bad for us.
we already have a warning against us, all right? So, you know, this will be...
So, So Ray decides to load up Chan into a car, drive him out to like a nearby cliff, which I guess he has access to, God bless. And it's just like, well, time to put him in a car and send it off over the rocks. Well, see you around. And he does. He decides the best way to protect his frat is by putting a brick on a gas pedal with a knocked out guy and just sending the car over a cliff, because that definitely raises less questions than him dying of an alcohol overdose.
Well, like, yeah. Correct me if I'm, does the frat guy just like, you gotta take care of this, man? Like, do they like delegate it to him, or does he just do this on
his own?
No,
he takes it upon himself. He's like, I had to do it because I like had to prove myself to the fraternity that like I was like willing to like protect them or whatever.
I don't think that's true, because he's already a brother, right? Like he's in at that point, you know. So,
but I think he felt like he was like maybe being judged a bit more harshly because he was a minority. But even then, I get why he would feel that way. But at the same time, like, this kind of, I think, supersedes perhaps the minority thing is someone died.
This is going from 0 to 200. This is like immediately going from like, haha, I'm a fun college student having a nice time, to just like, well, guess I'm a crime boss now.
I was gonna say, like, this is the kind of thing that, a lot of steps. If you were in maybe like the mob, this would be the kind of thing that you'd be like, I got it. To like, it's a low level like way to prove yourself to the mob that like you're down to
frat.
Hang. Like you said, a lot of times frats are like specifically where like the wealthier students or like families from families of money and influence are like hanging out. So you'd think you'd be like, we got to find the richest
famously
guy.
Famously, people roast it as a place to buy friends.
This is, I think, where like maybe perhaps the richest or most well-connected frat brother would need to step in and be like, I have my dad owns the police, like we're good, like I got this covered or something. Also, again, like he's trying to stage it as like a drunk driving accident, and I'm like, you probably, like, honestly, guy got drunk and fell down the stairs is a pretty, for the like the 80s, pretty like solid story, I think, to tell the police.
In fact,
it's not going to look like murder.
In fact, like in the 80s, I don't think the hazing stories were really that in. I feel like it was like the 90s, 2000s when all that stuff was like really in the news, you know? Like, so yeah. Also, I feel like college people down the stairs
benefit?
Would be totally good. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You know what a benefit of the whole story of he got drunk and fell down the stairs, like a huge benefit of using that story is? It's the truth. It is what happened. So that would probably make his life a lot simpler to just go with what happened, as opposed to, because that's the other thing is like, oh, this guy who was rushing your fraternity got fucking blackout drunk and then you let him drive. How is that better? How is that better than he fell down the stairs? Here, spoiler, it's not.
It's much
not
worse.
Legally
yeah, no.
better for you. It, in fact, some would say it's legally notably worse.
Also, why would he drive out to like a cliff? Like, that also seems a bit suspicious. It's like, why did he drunk drive out to a cliff when he supposedly probably lives at the frat house, I would assume. Like, where was he going?
Well, he's pledging, right?
Oh,
so he's not in yet.
True.
But even, I mean, but even so, it still begs the question, why did he drive to a cliff? Because there's no good answer for it, because you wouldn't drive to it. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make sense. But
also, did nobody check this guy's pulse? Like, you still have a pulse when you're unconscious and you breathe. Like, I think that when you're carrying someone's body, you would like maybe feel them breathing, like a little bit, at least a little bit. Like, maybe
did
not
even
a lot.
Did even try to get him in the elephant walk? I mean, that probably would have, like, cleared it all up, I think, but, you know.
I mean, he's prime, like, chicken cutleting right now. Like, you could just toss him on the beach. He's already just, like, limp. Just toss him on the beach. You're already there.
Yeah. I suppose we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but, so as he sends the car over the cliff and throws the brick on the accelerator, in the most annoying way possible, Chan wakes up a little bit and goes,
hey, what's up, man? How's it going?
And then, like, the car starts careening off the cliff, and he's like, oh, no, I'm too drunk to do anything. Help, bro, help.
Yeah, it's super unclear why Chan can't do anything, except for, like, they play it up like, oh, it's because he's panicking, which, like, I guess that's fair to, like, wake up after being unconscious and, like, find yourself in the driver's seat of a car that's headed towards a cliff. Like, yeah, that's a bit startling.
He just, like, doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, he's just kind of like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, no. If only there was some way I could stop this.
It's not a ride, Chan. Like, you know, this is...
Yeah, he's like freaking out and he's like grabbing at Ray, who's like, Ray's like trying to like grab him from inside the car. I'm like, you're both dumb as fuck. Like, I don't know what's going on between the two of you, but you're both stupid as shit. I'm like, Ray, why don't you use your words to tell him to take the brick off of the gas pedal? That's
scream
all you have
the word
to do.
Brakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just yell brakes over and over again. Brakes, brakes, brakes until he does it.
Like, you're heading toward a cliff. Jump out. Don't head toward the cliff. There, you know?
Wheel. How about that? Turn the steering wheel away from the cliff. Like, there's a lot of options because he's pretty far back from the cliff when it
starts. Anything but gas at this point. You know?
That's really the kicker, is this takes much longer than you would expect. Like, it takes long enough for him to be like, hey, what's going on? Oh, what the? Oh no. Oh, jeez. And then, like, grab his arm and pull his watch off, because he does pull Ray's watch off, to which Ray's like, well, now they know I did it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the case,
he will,
man.
Straight
I, like,
up,
I don't know.
He will literally say that verbatim to another character in like 5 minutes. And I'm like, I don't think that they would like investigate this as a murder. And even if they did, finding your watch, I don't think they'd be like, we know who this belongs to. Like, I don't know that that's
really elephant
either.
Walk, right?
The smoking gun you think it
literally,
is.
Literally, even if it has your name engraved on the back, like, there have been times where I have left my shirt at someone else's place. If they got killed, that's not my problem.
Yeah.
It's like, not right. I didn't do it. I just left my shirt there, bro. That's crazy.
And it's like, it's 1980 or 1983 or 84. I think this happened a year ago. So in 1983. So, like, it's not like there was, like, cell phones to, like, triangulate Ray's position. If the police were like, hey, we found your watch in the car, this guy who drove off a cliff, do you know anything about it? All you'd have to do is be like,
damn,
no, I was at a frat party.
Watch.
Yeah.
Do you know what my favorite thing about this is, though? Like, in telling this story, Ray also didn't learn his lesson, because he's kind of making this confession of the assumption that Chet's, like, basically dead in the Poonji pit, you know,
yeah,
and he doesn't have to, like, deal with it. But
yeah.
Oh, guess what? Guess what? You fucked up again, right? Like, it's the same problem, you dipshit. Like, he's not dead yet either. You know, but anyway.
Ray's
right,
really
right.
Bad at estimating whether or not someone's still alive. That's, like, his worst trait. He's really bad at guessing.
Yeah. And then he's like, and that's why I'm really here at the camp. I'm on the lam for a murder nobody's really looking for. You know,
for whatever
and then
reason.
I hope, yeah. And then maybe if I hang out here long enough, everyone will forget about the death. And,
which, you know. Like, what if Chan had just lived through it? What if, like, this was a car in the modern age and not the 80s? So, like, safety standards existed. So, like, an A-pillar didn't just go through Chan, you know, or, like, whatever the fuck. Like, what if he just, like, lived through that, too? And he was like, this Ray guy is crazy, bro. You would not believe what this guy tried to fucking do to me.
Oh, my
Holy
God.
Shit.
What if Chan survives, thinks it's part of hazing, and then became a brother at the fraternity while Ray is on the run? That's what I think is, yeah, boom, season 13, here we go, coven 3, we got it.
So Ray then goes, ah, oh, geez, I only maybe killed him before, but now I definitely killed him. Oh, brother. And is explaining this to Ray, or explaining this to Chet, who he thinks is dead. And then it says, like, oh, the Times reported that this was that they found him 3 days ago, which means they're going to find my watch, which means I'm a made man. They're definitely going to find me and it's over for me, which, yeah, first question here. So that means this case was cold for 362 days and then they found a crashed car and a body. I guess my first question is, bro, how remote are these cliffs that no one saw a crashed car at the bottom of the cliffs for a fucking year? That's crazy.
And no one, like, looked for him. No one looked for Chan. Like, nobody was like, hey, maybe we should check the surrounding areas to see if he's there.
College kid. Yeah. Like, who's missing his car, too, you know? So, but...
Cool. What a cool backstory.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And then Chet in, like, the most embarrassing, just like, oh, just kidding, I'm alive. Wow, that's embarrassing, bro. I can't believe you told me that. No, but,
It is, that is kind of how he says it, too. He's like, damn, that's crazy that you told me that. I'm still here and alive, actually.
Yeah. Just fucked up, honestly, yeah. So.
Yeah, and he, like, it's really funny, because Chet pulls... He pulls a me. I would be physically incapable of not making a funny joke, too. Chet's like, hey, I'm not dead. Lamau, you killed Chan twice. That's fucked up. and he's, like, laughing to himself about his own joke. And Ray does not like this. Ray does not think this is funny.
Right.
I think it's funny. I think Chet was very funny
so
when he said
it. It's such a good bit. Like, it is the most, like, diffusing a situation thing possible. Because what else is he supposed to do? Just, like, act like he's dead the whole time? Well, then Ray's just going to run off, and let's be real, that's what Ray's going to do anyway, because that's all this dude does at this point.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. Oh, my God. That's his whole character now, you know? Like,
yeah, Ray is the guy who runs, like, literally. Yeah. That's his whole the purpose of a machine is what it does. And Ray gets put in any form of danger and then runs away. Ergo, the purpose of Ray is to run away.
Right.
Which is, like,
right.
really weird, because you'd think that, like, the frat backstory would indicate that, like, he's a ride or die type person who's like, yeah, I'm willing to do anything for my friends to protect them.
Loyalty.
Doesn't go well for him, though.
Yeah.
I'll help you, Chan. Don't worry. Oh, I messed that up. You know,
maybe, like, this is character development. Maybe him being a little, like, coward is like, you know what? I tried to be loyal to my friends one time, and it made me accidentally kill a guy.
By throwing him off a cliff in a car?
Well, I don't think he was Chan's friend.
I mean, that's the thing.
Look, Chan, you and I are the only minority. We got to stick together. Uh-oh. It looks like I got to throw this Chan guy off a cliff.
Twice he killed Chan.
Incredible stuff. So yeah, Chet kind of goes, hey, by the way, I'm actually alive. Just Lamau thought I'd let you know, man. It's crazy that you killed him twice. And then Ray's just like, fuck this, I'm leaving. And then he just runs. And Chet's even like, come on, man. Come on, at least help me out here. And Ray's like, nope, fuck this. You know my secret now. Bye-bye, goodbye.
Poor Chet.
Which Chet also, it's so funny that Chet, like, gave his quote-unquote big secret, and everyone's response to it was just, yeah, man, we know, to the point that he can't be like, but I told you I took the steroids, so we're even. He's like, fuck no, we're not. Everyone knew you took steroids. That doesn't count.
Yeah, now that I think about it, it is funny, because, like, that is a reoccurring theme of this season, is like, oh, all of the characters have to, like, confess a thing they did, and I'm like, I think that only works in, like, a I know what you did last summer type situation, where it's, like, relevant. Otherwise, like, I don't really care what these people did prior to coming to the camp.
It's basically, just like, well, they're all assholes in some way or another, you know, but... Except for Brooke, I guess, yeah.
Well, Brooke's thing was like, oh, my, like, skeleton in my closet is that my ex-fiancé did a, like, murder-suicide on our wedding day. And I'm like, well, that's not, like, a secret that's, like, your fault. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're okay. You didn't do anything. So, like, it's fine. You don't have to share that. It's nice that you did, I guess, so we understand you more as your friends. But, like, it's okay.
Honestly, it's looking like the end of this. Chet's gonna, like steroids. Like, that's nothing. This dude killed somebody, you know? Like, and then, like, it's who the hell knows what's coming up next.
I want to say, I think that Xavier's is the gay porn thing, that they're like, oh, yeah, that's his, like, scary, skeleton in the closet. I'm like, these are all radically, like, different. Like, none of these are, like, similar in any way. Like, did steroids and got disqualified from the Olympics is not even close to, like, had a psychotic fiance who did a murder-suicide or accidentally killed a guy 2 times. Like, those things are all way different.
Yeah, just, like... was like a homeless drug addict who had lost everything and then got taken advantage of.
Right.
Like, that's the other thing is, like, I'll be real. They keep trying to sell Xavier's is like, oh, I can't believe he did that. I'm like, was exploited? Like, what do you mean?
Right?
Like, like, it's not like he was like, hell yeah, brother, can't wait to do this. Like, the whole time he's like, I wish I didn't have to, but I was exploited.
Yeah.
And they're just like, no, 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 you hate this dude. I'm like, no, I don't.
Yeah. Also, like, he's not portrayed as like, Xavier, like, is like at worst kind of stupid. But he's portrayed as being like one of the only people in the group that has like any form of empathy or conscience whatsoever.
Right.
So, like, I can't be mad at Xavier because everything the show tries to convince you to like hate him for is either not his fault or like just isn't a bad thing. Like him crying because Blake got killed and like several other people died because he brought them there. Like, I'm supposed to, I think that he's like a little pussy, but I'm like, no, that means he has like a conscience, which is like a good thing, a good quality to have. Alas, sometimes it feels like watching Until Dawn, not the movie, but the game. So, yeah, apparently Ray could have just gotten out of the pit at any time that he wanted, but he chose not to for some reason, but he can.
Until he knew Chet was alive, and then he was like, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, like,
when it was just me down here alone with my thoughts, I was like, I'll lie on the ground, cover myself with some dirt. The killer will come by, scoop you out of the pit, I'll be Gucci. Mm-hmm.
Confessing everything I've ever done in my life, and then, oh no!
How could this have happened?
What the hell?
That's the other thing is, like, I'm sorry, but like, I know that it's like a metaphorical thing and he thought that Chet was dead, but like, if it was like your deepest, darkest secret and the person you're confessing it to you think is dead and can't hear you, that's not a confession. You're just saying it out loud. You could have done that at any point in time before now.
I think, like, it's like a deathbed thing where you think, like, well, we're both going to die in this Poonji pit. I guess I might as well tell you this. And then it's like, oh, I wasn't going to die. I was just down here with the body. I just felt like getting that off my chest because why not? Oh, but, you know, like, which then it's like, what the hell are we doing?
He literally only does it so that, like, A, this scene where they're in the pit has something happening in it, and B, so that us, the audience, can learn Ray's secret. Because otherwise, because what happens to Ray in about 5 minutes, there's no other way we could have learned what Ray did other than
this. You know what? After I've sprinted from a killer and I'm exhausted, what really re-energizes me, just, you know, confession. You know, I just kind of like get the sins off my, there we go. I'm ready for another lap, Mr. Jingles. Let's do it.
It's very Catholic of you, Slobby.
Do a couple of Hail Marys and I'm ready to go again.
There you go. Exactly.
So after Ray decides to just leave the pit because he could just do that the whole time, I guess, we cut back to Trevor Montana Xavier. They're working their way back to the parking lot. Xavier, again, has a conscious, has a moment and goes, hey, man, I really don't want to just like leave anyone else here up to die. Like, we should probably go get Margaret. Like, she's fucking weird, but like, if Mr. Jingles is hunting anyone, it's explicitly her. So we should probably make sure she's like, you know, aware he's here, and then probably take her out of here. Like, if we can make that happen in some way, shape, or form.
Or at least try. We like have to at least try. So again, like, they're playing this as like, oh, stupid Xavier, but it's like, you know what? He has more of a conscience than most horror movie characters do. And Trevor's like, you know what? You're right. Also, we have to save Birdie. And I'm like, I guess we also forgot about Birdie. The show forgot about Birdie. We haven't seen Birdie since episode 1.
I remembered Birdie.
Yeah, I remember Birdie.
I'll always remember Birdie.
Yeah, Birdie kicks ass. I love Birdie.
Yeah, we like Birdie, yeah.
And then Trevor's like, okay, we'll get Margaret and Birdie on the way to the parking lot. And then Montana's like, who the hell is Birdie? Just like, the rest of the people watching this show every week. And then Xavier's like, excuse me, Birdie is my best friend and the love of my life. And we have to save her. And Trevor's like, Chef Birdie is good people. And I'm like, you guys didn't even remember those people existed until Xavier brought them up. And then I guess they fucked around too long. Those people who didn't stop running at all ever wasted too much time. And now Mr. Jingles, who took a side quest to go fuck with a really nerdy guy who is dressed as him, has somehow caught up to them.
Is a large man with a limp.
Yeah.
Again, to be clear. He does limp everywhere. He's not a fast man. Trevor's just like a gym rat. And this big man with a limp is like, well, guess I caught up to it. Like, what were they doing? Were they just like sitting down for 2 hours off camera?
Because we never see this group of people like stopped. The most they stopped to do was right now when Xavier's like, wait, we have to go get Margaret. And that's like maybe 10 seconds. They've not been running for maybe 10 seconds. I think they might be, I'm not giving them any credit. If anything, they're ripping it off, not like trying to take a playbook like thing out of it, but I think they might be trying to go for like how in Halloween and in Friday the 13th, like Jason and Michael sometimes will just like be there, which are like sometimes it's explained by like supernatural ways in movies like Scream. The way it's explained is there are two killers that are dressed multiple, as the same way, same person.
And the thing is, like, the supernatural element, I definitely think is the one that's like more plausible, right? Because they are kind of selling him as like a Jason or a Mikers or whatever.
Right.
The problem is those characters like don't say shit, and they usually cover their face, and they're like mysterious and quiet, you know, on approach. This guy's defining trait is that he's not quiet.
Right.
It's that he jingle jangles when he approaches, so he can't really. He's like. They designed a guy to be as unsupernatural as possible. They interview him and he goes, I think high fructose corn syrup is making people murderers. Like, there's nothing less supernatural than that.
God, I so wish that would have been like the one line Michael Myers got to say in Halloween. Like the one thing he ever said was like, I think aspartame made me kill people. Like, I really wish that would have been what they leaned into in other... in other horror franchises.
God, damn it, Rob Zombie, not you too. But,
yeah. Oh my God, yeah, it's a lot. And I want to say I'm not gonna bet like real money on it, but I think I'm like 98% sure that Mr. Jingles does not have any kind of supernatural affiliation. In fact, he is like really explicitly just a man, like just a guy, not even like a particularly like. Exceptional guy, just like a dude. He's not like a brain genius like John Kramer from Saw or something. Like, he's just a guy. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But again, I think they are kind of hoping that you're like, oh, well, in horror movies, that's just like, that's the thing. It's a trope of like, oh, the killer is just there and they're walking and they caught up just walking while all these people are running. And I'm like, well, yeah, but eventually those franchises do explain it to a certain extent. But I don't think that's what they're doing here. I think they're just like, he caught up to them because he's Mr. Jingles. And I was also thinking, going back to the jingling thing, I was trying to think, I'm like, is the jingling a ripoff of something? And like, going back, I can't think of a single like notable horror icon that like makes a noise to announce their presence as they're showing up to kill someone.
I can't think of an icon. I know there is sometimes a trope of like the knife like scraping on something, that kind of thing that
Freddy,
you know,
does
they're
that
coming
a lot,
for you.
Yeah. And Freddy has the like the kids singing lullaby thing.
Right.
But like that's a dream world. So like that makes kind of sense.
Right. It's like done in, it's meant to like menace you. Jingle sounds like he's just not good at this. It's like,
or
somebody
he's got
should
a lot
tell
of keys.
Him, like, that's...
He just has a lot of keys. He's a guy who has a lot of keys. He's a janitor. It makes sense that he would have a lot of keys.
It's like, bro, like they know you're coming. Like, how do they keep knowing I'm coming? And it's like, oh, somebody got
to
tell him. You know?
Yeah,
like,
it would be way easier for me to kill these people if I didn't make so much dang noise. But I just can't quit these keys, man. I love them too much. Ugh. Anyway, that he's caught up to them, so they have to hide. And they hide in some canoes that are, like, set up by the lake, you know, like a summer camp. And under the canoes, they find the real Nurse Rita, which, if you'll remember from the last episode that we did, Donna, who was pretending to be Rita up until now, I guess just knocked her out and put her in the canoes. I don't know what her plan was, but, like, that's where the real nursery... They literally could have just had this character be like, yep, the implication is Donna killed her off screen, but no, now we have her here so that someone else can kill her, which is, like, nothing for no one.
I feel like, I think I might mention this with the people, like, they've kind of have the problem of, like, what's wrong with making a slasher movie that's the length of a TV season? Oh, yeah, I need more characters to kill, so here's some, you know, like, hence the Jingles fan club, etc., you know, but I don't know.
Yeah, we gotta make up some people. It's not like The Purge, where you have, like, infinite people to die. Like, you have a very small cast of characters, and you're getting rid of them pretty fucking quick.
Yeah.
So they, like, save her. They, like, untie her. And, like, Xavier, like, has his hand over her mouth and is like, please do not scream. There is a guy really close to us and he's going to kill us. You need to be quiet. And, like, it's super obvious. It's so obvious that, like, these people are not affiliated with the lady who kidnapped her, and that they are trying to help her, but they are obviously in a state of duress as well. And instead of having her react rationally, like, oh, okay, these people are helping me out of the ropes and the tape, clearly they don't mean to do me any harm and they are trying to warn me about something, she's like, nope, I'm going to escape and I'm going to start screaming for some reason. I'm like, why would you be screaming? The help is here already. Who are you screaming for? The help just arrived and already saved you. Like, who are you screaming? Because usually in that situation, when a character is running and screaming, it's to try and get the attention of, like, help. Help is the people who made you able to scream. So what are you doing? Who are you screaming for? Who fucking knows? And she crawls out of the fucking canoes in front of Mr. Jingles, who's like, I have to fucking kill this lady. I have no reason to kill this lady. She's obviously not even, like, a camper or, like, a counselor. She's dressed as a nurse.
I haven't killed someone in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm bored.
I gotta. And this lady who's, like, weirdly already fucked up, like, well, guess I'll fuck her up more. And she, like, as he immediately turbo kills her. And this is the only time he kills someone in a very, like, Jason Voorhees-ass way. He, like, breaks a boat oar. Instead of using the huge fucking knife in his hand, he sets the knife down. And then he, like, breaks off a boat oar and, like, impales her on it. Like, Jason fucking Voorhees. For some reason. Even though he has not done that to anyone else thus far. And then he leaves, and as, like, the rest of the crew is crawling out, like, they, like, read her name tag that says Rita, and they all kind of, like, gasp, like, oh, we figured out a thing. And I'm like, that is an insane leap of logic to be like, uh-oh, that means that our Nurse Rita is not real. I mean, two people could be named Rita. Like, that's not an uncommon name. Like, it is a coincidence, but, like, I'm in a podcast right now with two dudes with the same name. Like, it's not that weird.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When we're both nurses.
And you're both nurses. So it's
like, that's crazy. No, but, like, you make a really good point. Like, people who, like, love slasher films and stuff, right, they always talk about, like, oh, the, you know, the kills in this one were really cool, or, like, you know, they set up a really complicated, cool, like, kill thing here.
Right.
But the thing is, I don't think they usually have the killer, like, walk into the middle of the room with someone helpless and just be like, I had an idea. And that's kind of what he does here, is he just, like, walks in and is like, huh, I got to figure out a clever way to kill this lady. I don't just want to kill her with my knife. That's boring. Oh, door, or. Like, it's so stupid.
If I had to, like, say it was close to somebody, I'd say it's, like, kind of a Jason Voorhees thing, but his is almost always, like, an act of convenience. He's like, well, what do I have available to me?
Yeah, yeah.
And brutal then he has convenience. To use, yeah, and he has to use it. Brutal convenience. It's not a, like, how can I get silly with this? That's a Michael Myers thing. Michael Myers likes to get silly with it. Like, he'll pretend to be a ghost.
you do sometimes get the weird Jason Voorhees, like, I hid their body in a gross place for you to find, which, yeah. like, doesn't quite work, like, makes sense when you really break it up. Okay, we'll give Jason that. Okay.
He needs put his enrichment.
Head in a microwave.
He's yeah, bored. Exactly. He needs some enrichment. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. So he gets style points, I guess. Like, Mr. Jingles gets style points for this one. Now we're back to Ray again. Great. And he's running through the woods. And he runs into this group, the group of Xavier Montana and Trevor. And Xavier's like, holy shit, why are you covered in blood? And he's like, oh, I covered myself in dirt and leaves to hide. And I'm like, that he said blood, and your arms are clearly fucked up. Why would you not just say, I was attacked by Richard Ramirez, the other serial killer who's here? Why is I hidden some leaves your go-to? And he's like, it's cool, though. I left Brooke with Nurse Rita. It's going to be fine. And then group two, who made the insane leap of logic that Nurse Rita is a fake for some reason. Again, insane. It's, insane to come to that conclusion.
Okay. To their credit, it is very funny that Nurse Rita is dressed like an old-timey nurse lady. Like, that is, it is wild that she drove up to there. Because, remember, she didn't get to the camp. She, like, got to the gas station before the camp. So she was already dressed as a nurse. Like, there were no kids there. That's crazy. She should have been wearing, like, sensible jeans.
Yeah, Donna, who is pretending to be Rita, is dressed normal, like a normal person. And
with
she's just
sensible
yeah.
jeans.
She's yeah. like, and I'm Nurse Rita. Like, she's not wearing a costume that says, like, Nurse Rita on it. She's just like, oh, yeah, I'm Nurse Rita, and no one questioned it.
My Nurse Rita Halloween costume I got from Spirit Halloween, yeah.
With my Mr. Jingles mask that cost me $1,700, yeah. And the group two is like, no, that's not Nurse Rita. We found Nurse Rita, the real one. And I'm like, that lady didn't say a damn word to y'all before she got a boat oar through her skull. How are you coming up with this information? Like, truly, even if we were suspending disbelief, I don't think there's any universe where, like, because remember, no one has any reason to believe that Donna is not Nurse Rita besides Brooke, who got a syringe in the neck from her.
Yeah.
The other people have
She's been
no
nothing
reason.
But helpful.
Yeah, they have no reason to not trust Donna / Rita. So, like, for them to be like, holy shit, we found another lady named Rita, that means the lady that we know named Rita's fake. Like,
yeah, you at most, it would maybe get like a, huh, that's weird. We should keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Like, that's like really where it would be. It's just like, huh, that is really fucking bizarre.
I got shit to worry about, though, than the mystery of the multiple Ritas.
Yeah.
You know, like, it.
Yeah. For now, let's assume two women can be named Rita.
Let's
and
put a
nurses.
Pin in this, right?
Like,
and
at worst, I think I'd be like, oh, someone dressed this lady in Nurse Rita's, like, clothes. Like, this lady got into Nurse Rita's clothes. Like, I don't think I'd be like, wow, the lady I know as Nurse Rita must be pretending, like, has stolen her identity.
In real life, internally, you'd be like, oh my god, it's the other Nurse Rita is an imposter. And then a second, you're like, no, you idiot. Like, there's two Nurse Ritas. And, like, you wouldn't even
yeah.
bring it up. It wouldn't leave your mouth, you know? Like, it
yeah.
would be like, that was a dumb thing of me to think.
We'll just finding someone dead in a Mr. Beast shirt and being like, oh my god, this is the real Mr. Beast. The other one's a fake.
I mean, that though, code. I do have that conspiracy theory, but that's another time, so, you know. But
there hasn't been a real Jimmy Beast in 10 years. All right. Well, we got to hustle. We got
yeah,
some more episode to get
yeah,
through
yeah.
some fucking how. So they have the realization some fucking how that that's not the real Rita, to which Ray's like, then who's with Brooke? And they're like, no. Xavier and Trevor both insist, like, hey, we're getting Birdie and Margaret, by the way. And everyone's like, oh, okay. Gives Ray the keys to his bike after Ray repeatedly is just like, no, I'm gonna go. I want to go now. Don't make me wait. No, because, like, he's worried they'll, like, find Chet, and Chet will be like, hey, Ray confessed a crime to me. Chet was your friend. What happened to Chet was your friend, right? Like, I have a feeling, like, the thing is, you would say that and assume Chet would be like, wow, that sucks, man, but it's cool, we're friends. But no, Ray's just like, I gotta go. I gotta leave. And insists on it endlessly. Trevor eventually says, like, fuck it, man. Yeah, here's the keys. Get out of here. But just take Montana with you so Montana doesn't get killed, please. And then, yeah, he's just like, hey, by the way, my motorcycle's, like, really fucking crazy and cool. So, like, be careful or my motorcycle's gonna fuck you up. Which, like, yeah, okay, it's cool. I like that they have him talk like a weird uncle with a motorcycle. He talks like a Harley guy, which is always funny.
Yeah, he says some shit like, she'll buck you like a wild stallion if you don't go easy on the throttle. And I'm like, Trevor kicks ass, actually. I've decided that Trevor's the coolest character on the team currently. Like, he had some weird moments, but, like, Huge Hog Trevor, as we all call him, pretty funny.
He has some, like, Brock Sampson energy going on, where he's just kind of, like, taking the reins of the situation, even though he's maybe not fully qualified to do so, but, like, he's, no one else is even trying.
Yeah, so, that's like, fair.
I like that, yeah. So then we cut to Jingles, who now has an axe. He found one, I guess. He hears Chet down in the pit being like, ah, I can't believe my shitty friend Ray committed, he just admitted he did a murder and then left me down in this pit. And then Mr. Jingles walks up to the pit and is just like, huh, how about that? So then Xavier and Trevor find Chet in the pit. Xavier kind of has a, okay, I'm coming down, which, yeah, it's very bizarre that they send Xavier down into the pit and not Trevor, who would probably be better at lifting people out of the pit. And then Chet just immediately tells Xavier, like, the thing that, yeah, I also, this would be the first thing I say is, man, Ray left me down here. Fuck that guy. Like, holy shit. Fuck that guy. Yeah. And then Xavier also says the most reasonable thing out of everybody, which is, shit, man, if we want to get you out of here safely, we probably need, like, a doctor, which, like, yep. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. You're going to need, like, a whole extraction team. Yep. 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 Yeah. That's a bad place to be. And yeah, so kind of is like, hey, man, I don't want to just kill him. And Trevor then says, better you than Jingles, which.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it is, man. Also, like,
it's still
Jingles, like. Yeah.
It's still technically Jingles, even if you pull him off the spike. You know what I mean? It's net zero on this, you know, like there's no. It's not better. It's not.
Yeah, this isn't like a dark anthology game where, like, if you make this decision to pull him off the spike, and, like, now you're incriminated in a crime. Like, that's also not how it works.
Also, like, I don't make a lot of punji pits, but you can't pull the spike out of, like, where, like, the wall.
That's what I said.
You know what I mean?
Like, cut the stick off at the bottom, or, like, pull it out of the ground. Yeah. Like, you got a stick in you, but at least you're not bleeding out.
Right.
Shockingly common for impalements is, cut the thing that's impaling them and just bring them part and parcel with the thing through them to the hospital.
Right.
Because, yeah, a lot of times, like, you're stable until we pull that thing out of you, and then you're notably less stable really fast. And, like, we do have to get it out of you, but we want to make sure you're in a place where we can, like, handle the fallout of getting it out of you, right?
Right. I would like to remind everyone that the great and terrible AHS does not constitute medical advice on a podcast, but you could do worse, you know? I mean, like, I think that is true even for knives, too, like, if you're stabbed or, like, if you have something in you, like, leave it in when you do it at the emergency room. But I'm not legally liable for whatever.
If it's, like, all the way through, you probably, yeah. I mean, my medical advice is don't fall into the punji pit from the most dangerous game.
If I had to,
just go get in.
Look where you're going.
Don't get involved in the most dangerous game at all. Don't become the most dangerous game of all. Man, don't do that. That's like a bad place to be. So they decide to pull him out of the pit. They yoink him out. Chet keeps screaming, which, like, honestly, kind of reasonable if your friends are just kind of wiggling you on a big spike. Yeah. I think I would be like, ah, fuck, ah, man, come on, fuck, ah. So, like, reasonable. He's yelling. They try to pull him off there, and he's hooting and hollering, and you can hear Mr. Jingles, which... Again, like, if Mr. Jingles doesn't get the element of surprise, like, just get behind him and shove him in the pit. The pit works on everyone. It's like, he's got a limp. His balance is probably bad. Honestly, he's probably susceptible to the pit.
True. Yeah.
And they don't. And Jingles just kind of comes up. After a while, like, he walks by, and Trevor says the most reasonable thing possible, which is just like, there's three of us, we can take him, it would be easy. And then the big thing is like, okay, I agree with him, there are not three of us currently, one of you is impaled in a Poochie yeah. pit, that one does not contribute to combat.
Yeah, and like Xavier's
two of you.
Xavier's not like an Olympian on cocaine. Like Xavier, out of all of like the boys, is like, you know, just like a guy. Like he's not like a gym rat.
But he's still like
he's fit.
He's like fitness studio guy.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But he's not throw a good. He's not Mr. Muscles. He's not built like the other men. Like he's more like a cardio yeah. boy than anything. So, like, yeah, there's two of you, but Mr. Jingles is the bigger one. It makes more sense that the four people beat the shit out of Richard Ramirez earlier, and I'm still not mad about that, even though they do yeah. come to this conclusion. Also, so... Xavier's like, also, Mr. Jingles has a knife, and Trevor says, his knife... versus my guns. And then he's like slaps his arms and then he runs to go rush Mr. Jingles into the pit. Which again, Trevor kind of rips. Trevor's definitely winning my vote here. Yeah. And he does that.
Like straight up, they I think they're trying to make me like against him with what happens here. They're trying to make me be like, wow, see what happens when you rush in foolhardy. And I'm just like, no, he was right to do so. He should do it again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he charges the Mr. Jingles that is getting ready to harangue them. And oh, no, it wasn't actually Mr. Jingles. It was just... a guy dressed exactly like Mr. Jingles with a knife nearby, to which I say, yeah, man, you were going in that pit. That's on you. Like, this is stupid. This is a stupid thing to be doing. Why are you dressed like this man up here? What's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's the inhaler guy from earlier. In case it's not obvious, it's the like nerdy inhaler guy. And he got put in the hole. And Trevor's like, well, can't do anything about that. And then it cuts back to group three, which is now a new group that is Montana and Ray, and kind of Donna and Brooke. But Donna has already dragged Brooke away. When they get there, Montana sees like the drag path where Brooke was dragged away and is like, we should probably go follow it. But then as that happens, simultaneously, Richard Ramirez shows up because that's what he does, is show up at the most inopportune times. And Ray is like, fuck this, I'm leaving, because that's what Ray does, is leave at the most inopportune times.
Yeah. And this will be his final act of I'm just going to leave again.
Yeah, he does not wait for Montana. Montana's like, come on, man, a third time? You're going to do this a third time? And he runs to the motorcycle to, like, leave Montana behind. And then now it's time for twist number 7, 8 of this episode that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ugh.
Well, as Ray is driving away, Ray is driving, and he's right about to get out the front door out of the one street that leads out of the camp, and Ah, shucks, wouldn't you know it, Mr. Jingles happens to be standing by the side of a road with his axe, and he's just swing bada-bada ready, sitting there in position, fully cocked. And the second that motorcycle goes past, he nails that swing with superhuman accuracy and timing and strength, and fully decapitates Ray, killing him instantly, I guess. It's like legitimately like played for comedy, and it should be, because it's like very stupid. It's legitimately like very, very stupid. Like, if they wanted to make this be a serious thing, what they could have done is just like have him put like a steel wire across the bridge or whatever, so that it just like takes Ray out instantly as he's, you know, driving away without looking close enough in the rain. But instead they just have him be like a funny magical baseball Batman who happens to swing someone's head off as he's leaving. It's done. This is like one of those just like, it's a little, again, you were saying earlier, like it's fine when Jason and Michael Myers do this occasionally, because there is like a certain like menace and like a certain like supernatural element to them or whatever. But this is just a big guy with a limp who happened to hit this like unbelievable axe swing, who's just kind of like, huh, that's crazy. That's actually way crazier than when I killed those kids, which is the only thing I'm known for.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's now, like, killing some kids and then, like, this, which, honestly, this is way more impressive, but no one will ever know.
Yeah, you'd think this was, like, a thing of, like, he practiced while he was in jail or whatever, but no, he's just been, like, chilling in jail, like, not talking to anybody, or the asylum jail or whatever. So, like, it's not like he, like, got really ripped, because I think they even in like Halloween make like a passing statement, at least in the Rob Zombie one, of like, yeah, he just works out all the time. Like, he just is getting super jacked. Michael Myers is just getting super jacked all the time, but he never talks to anybody. They don't do that with Mr. Jingles. They're just like, yeah, he's just a brain genius who can predict everyone's movements at all times. Also, I don't know. Listen, don't quote me on this. I'm not like a physicist or anything, or any kind of scientist. I don't know that this is like something they'd have to test on Mythbusters, of whether or not if you swung an axe at someone driving like roughly 50 miles an hour on a motorcycle, that it wouldn't just shatter your arm and would instead decapitate the person who's driving by. It does not seem like it goes the way that it happens in this scene.
I imagine your arms would be okay, but you would get the axe like wedged in them, and then they would like spin out and, you know, fall all over, and it would be a big old mess. Because like, you can definitely swing a stick and hit something going 80 to 100 miles an hour and be okay. Source: baseball. But like, there's also like a difference when it's like a whole ass man and your axe can get stuck in the baseball, and the baseball weighs like 150 pounds,
and the baseball's also sitting yeah. on a huge piece of machinery that's going super yeah. fast and has a lot of forward momentum. Yeah, it's, I don't know, again, yeah. it's a horror movie, so I quote unquote, so I can like kind of forgive it, I guess. But anyway, Ray's
but
super
like-
dead.
It's just so, it's played in like such a comedic way. It's so dumb. If Ray like wasn't a major character that they just spent a bunch of time giving backstory, I might be less pissed off about this. But it's like they spent so much time on Ray, and then they're just like, haha, fuck that guy. And I'm like, well, I agree, fuck that guy. Like, you did just spend a lot of time on that guy.
They were like, we have to make you care about this character, I guess, in a negative way before he dies in 25 seconds.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks, American Horror Story. So that's Ray. That's Ray done then. Back to Richard Ramirez, who's walking up to Montana and rubbing his knife on her face. Immediately she starts making out with him, which I, at first, before I remembered that this happened, was like, that's kind of funny that Montana's thing is like, I'll just try to fuck anything. Like, that's my go-to. Because that's what I joke about all the time. It's like, if aliens come to Earth, I'm going to offer the Hukluk 9000 to try and not die. Montana's like, I'm going for it. I'm like, you know what? Go for it. Get your bag. But that's not two things. One, this is Richard Ramirez, the real man. So that's right. not good. Yeah. That's no good. And then two.
That's no good.
and then two, it works kind of. And also, like,
Yeah.
It's not because it works because the twist is that she's his girlfriend, I guess. Because she like bites him in the middle of them making out. Which, like, why did he walk up and start rubbing his knife on her face? Like, what was that about, you fucking weirdo?
It's called foreplay, sweaty. Look it up.
Yeah. And then they start, you think that, because, like, she's immediately like, why the hell haven't you killed her yet? And she, like, doesn't say who she's talking about. And I'm like, so what would have happened if Ray wasn't a pussy and would have just, like, stayed here? Like, Richard Ramirez would have just beefed it and, fucked up their whole plan, I guess. I guess they would have had to... Richard Ramirez would have probably had to kill Ray, I suppose. Either way, because from the way that Montana reacts is, Richard Ramirez is not supposed to be here right now. He has been like, I'm gonna go see my girlfriend because I keep fucking up killing people for my other girlfriend. And both of them are gonna be mad at him. So the implication is that he's there because he's there for Montana, who, like, wants her to kill somebody that they don't say who it is yet.
You bring up a great point. Richard Ramirez fucking sucks at his job.
Yeah.
In this, like, he is so bad at, like, it, not only is he bad at killing people, he's bad at, like, stick-to-itiveness with killing people. Because he'll, like, go get ready to kill somebody, and they'll be like, whoa, 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 what if I offer you a sleeve of Oreos? And he's like, okay, yeah, I'll kill somebody else. Yeah, no problem.
And so that's the twist that it leaves off on, is that they're like together.
Of feet.
Yeah. They leave us with this weird, like, love triangle for Richard Ramirez, which is, like, not great. not super good.
I'm just kind of shaking my head. You know what I mean? Like, I know it doesn't come through on the pod, just sort of like, how far we've fallen, American Horror Story.
Yeah, like, this ending did make me actively go, oh, fuck off. Like, I was so mad at how stupid this is. Because there are so many times that Montana, like, there has to be a point where there's another serial killer who's shown up where you're just like, okay, I'm pulling the ripcord. I'm out of here. Fuck this. Yeah. Like, two serial killers?
That's,
I'm leaving.
That's the
this
thing
is stupid.
In this one episode, I know it's taken us three episodes to, like, cover it, but it's because of this shit. Like, now we have three separate women who are, like, puppet controlling a different serial killer to, like, participate in their weird serial killer Hunger Games. And that means that at least two of them, Donna, who is controlling Mr. Jingles, and now Montana, who's controlling Richard Ramirez, has to be like, fuck, there's another serial killer here? What the fuck? Like, I'm trying to do a plan. I'm trying to do a heist, and someone else is doing the same heist? What the fuck is happening? Like,
two flash mobs showed up to the same Home Depot? This is a disaster.
Yeah, like, what are the odds? And yet there's still characters in this show that are like, there can't be two women named Rita. I'm like, there's two serial killers hunting you. Like, what do you mean?
Suspension of disbelief for serial killers is over. Suspension for disbelief for women named Rita. I'm out of here.
There has never in the history of history been two women named Rita. That's fucked up.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for listening to Slash Dance, everybody. Did you like the part where the Slash Dance happened? It didn't. It never happened. There never was a Slash Dance. That never occurred. There never really even was a Flash Dance thing, was there?
No.
No. Okay. Cool. So our next episode is called, you can't name it True Killers. There's already, one of them's a real man who killed people. Well, till next time, everyone, thank you so much for listening, and if you're watching the show along, sorry. Till next time,
don't
have a great night.
Bye.